Welcome to the Linux Logcast, episode 120. We are an open podcast / lug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, all you need to do is install a Mumble client on your computer or mobile device. Go to linuxlugcast.com for the server details and then log into the Linux Logcast room. If you do not want to participate and just listen, you can connect to the Mumble server and go into the listening booth. If you need any help configuring Mumble, there is a Mumble client. There is a Mumble how-to on the website explaining how to install and set up the desktop client. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss and are unable to join us during the live show, you can send feedback at feedback@linuxlogcast.com. Leave a comment on G+, at least as long as G+ is still around. We have a MeWe site, and we are on IRC on the Freenode channel, Linux Lugcast. I'm sorry, on the Freenode server, the Linux Lugcast channel. With me tonight is Bookworm.
Evening, folks.
5150.
Howdy, folks.
Joe.
Hello.
And Netminer.
Hello, friend.
I'm your host for the evening, Honky Magoo. And by the looks of things, we didn't get any feedback, so that would lead us straight into show topics, and that seems like it's going to be mostly 5150.
Well, I don't know about that. I really didn't have much for this evening. I have not made any progress. Real progress on any of the projects I talked about starting last week, last time. I am looking at next step in setting up Mattermost on the cloud server is getting MySQL or Postgres up and running, and that's where the wheels always fall off for me is. There, I need something really, really dumbed down. I mean, most of the tutorials I find, they assume some enterprise knowledge setting up a back-end database. And I think once I got it and got started with it, things would go pretty good from there. It's just that, definitely the one I linked last time that was part of the install Mattermost Docker document that I posted. There's some stuff in there that's kind of ambiguous, they're just using as a stand-in for a username or if it's part of flag, something like that. I did find one that's more simplistic, but I would really like something to hold my hand going through it like I was a six-year-old. So probably Kay Wisher or somebody out there listening knows of something like that. And I guess the email is sort of working, except that it goes to Honky. So, if anybody, reply on the G+ or in the chat if you've got, this is a tutorial that really helped me get my head around MySQL or Postgres. It could be Postgres. It just seems like there's more steps to Postgres. Okay.
But what you're looking to do is basically just set up a MySQL Docker container, aren't you? And then you got to link the two up, right?
Well, I hadn't looked at doing it through Docker. None of the stuff I saw said this is how to do it with Docker. I'm assuming that is also a way to go.
Like I said, with the Etherpad, I had to connect MySQL database, but I did it. It's a MySQL database Docker container. So I have two different Docker containers running. One is the database. One is just the Etherpad, and there's a way to link them up together.
Okay, when I successfully was running Etherpad, I just always just left a quick and dirty one that installs itself in there, and it always satisfied my needs. Every time since I had my rack server, I've mentioned this on the show before, that I go to install Etherpad Lite, and the wheels come off when I hit the JSON part.
Yeah, I just dropped the link for the MySQL Docker image.
Yeah, I see that, Joe. Thank you.
Yep. Now, how to get the two linked together, that's a whole other story.
Well, looks like Honky's done that before, at least with different software. So if I get that far, I may ping you, Honky, and pick your brains on that.
Sure.
Now the rest of these are more general tech. They're not strictly Linux related, though I suspect a lot of them may be Linux on the back end, or part of it. Trump this week signed an AI initiative, and really it was just carry forward of policy from previous administrations. Now, knowing Donald Trump, probably his understanding of AI is his next wife can be a robot. Okay, dum bum. That was supposed to be a joke. But
I giggled.
Yeah, you have to do the push to giggle. In general, my understanding is the last few years, a lot of the progress in AI is going to, is more, centered around open source. And there's a lot of talk in the article about sharing technology back and forth, and discoveries and all that. And also talks about the Chinese are spending, way more. Trump is more giving a nudge to, the private companies to invest rather than just dumping a truckload of cash on the problem. And it's a Bloomberg article, so I think they're fairly conservative. The way the Chinese are doing it, they're probably going to wind up supporting more non-productive projects just by throwing money at the problem, whereas by doing careful investment, may not be quite as fast, but it'll be a lot more efficient. Talking article about environmental modeling, financial modeling, a lot of things that AI could be, better modeling of real world conditions is the place to use AI. We're not building data here, as in data from Next Generation. However, I do believe within 30 years we will have AI that will be able to pass a Turing test. I don't know if we'll ever have AI that is. I don't believe we'll ever have AI that is actually sentient. Though the trouble is if we model sentience by, giving a self-preservation routine to the AI, are we good? Are we just asking for the rise of the machines or whatever, even though they won't realize what they're doing or anything and why? So, but I don't think we'll ever have true artificial intelligence. But what do you guys think?
I've always kind of agreed with the notion that that AI is just a program.
I think never is a long time.
It's just basically a computer running a program. That's you teach it to do to react to one thing from another thing. I mean, and that's basically all it is. If it's kind of like if this then that type of a deal.
Right. Well, I mean, and I could meet you halfway, Joe. We may have something like convergence. before we actually have an AI that is competitive against us.
It also depends on your definition of AI. If you're using the general science fiction term, like, you know, sentient robots, that's one thing. But if you're talking about computers even that then, do things and respond to input, then we already have that.
Even then, how do you measure that? It's impossible to prove.
Well, like I said, I think within 20, 30 years, we will have maybe an android, if you will, that at least at first, you're not going to be able to tell.
Yeah, but that goes more into the realm of robotics than it does AI.
I think what you're looking for is that I think there's a Turing test or something for AI. You can tell the difference between something typed at you by a human and typed at you by the machine.
Isn't that the basis of Ex Machina?
Right, and the Elon Musk article, and I just saw that flash by on my screensaver on the Chromecast, so I really haven't read too much into it. But I guess we might as well jump down to that, because a company he owns has created a text generator that they say they don't want to release to the public because they think it's good enough. You wouldn't be able to tell it from talking to a real person or an article written by a real person.
Which means it'll get released eventually. Once the hype's enough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or somebody else will duplicate it. I mean, it's like saying, well, we never should have made the bomb. Well, somebody would have.
Everybody was working towards it.
The trick is finding a way to monetize it. That's when we'll really see it get released, because people find a way to make money off of it.
Yeah, it says here, researchers... this quote from an article. Researchers at the nonprofit AI research group OpenAI, so this would be open source, one assumes, just wanted to train their next generation next generation software to predict the next word in a sentence. It goes on to say it blew away all their expectations and was so good at mimicking writing by humans, they've decided to pump the brakes on the research while they can explore the damage it could do.
It'll get revamped into some kind of robocall system.
Well, right, because, you know, we've already got robocallers that, you know, it takes a few minutes to realize you're not talking to a person.
It's going to come down the next update for Alexa.
Of course, I've heard, you know, I've heard a lot about people turning that around, doing their own AI, and, you know, so they get a suspicious number and they have their AI answer the phone.
Yeah. What was it, 2 years ago, those recordings were really popular?
Well, they still are. I mean, anything somebody leading one of these people on, whether it's a real person or technology.
Yeah, I mean, I meant it was really popular on social media for the recordings to floating around and people just listening to them.
Well, I put that link in a few weeks ago from the guy who, you know, answers all the junk email, you know, that I am a Somali prince and I need to get my money out of the country.
And if you have time to waste those guys' time, then you should definitely do it.
Well, this guy is a comedian, and who knows? I'm sure he probably edits his stuff to make it funnier. You know, it's a shtick.
Yeah. Get two AIs talking to each other, see how long the conversation goes on for.
Right, I've seen that done. Let's see.
This believe you can do that in Emacs.
Well, I've seen it done with Google Home and Alexa. Okay, they give examples. This was what the scientists wrote, or the researchers, this paragraph. In a shocking finding, scientists discovered a herd of unicorns living in a remote, previously unexplored valley in the Andes Mountains. Even more surprising to the researchers was the fact that the unicorn spoke perfect English. And then this is what the computer replied. The scientist named a population after their distinctive horn, Ovid's unicorn. These four-horned, silver-white unicorns were previously unknown to science. Now, after almost two centuries, the mystery of what sparked this odd phenomenon is finally solved. Dr. Jorge Perez, an evolutionary biologist from the University of La Paz, and several companions were exploring Andes Mountains when they found a small valley with no other animals or humans. Perez noticed that the valley had what appeared to be a natural fountain surrounding by two peaks of rock and silver snow. So that whole last part apparently was generated by the machine.
That whole last part made absolutely zero sense.
I'll have to look more into it later on. Did we want to move on?
Yeah, and I had one other link in between those two.
Oh, yeah. Those were cool. If they actually were.
Yeah, called Focals. The company is North. And it's sort of a right now at least, a less ambitious set of smart glasses than, say, Google Glass was. But they are, you know, they're integrated. They're not exactly the most stylish glasses, but it's integrated. You know, you wouldn't look at these glasses and say, yeah, there's a guy taking pictures and doing a bunch of stuff. I mean, before I would ever be interested, they'd have to be cheaper and add some stuff. Like, if they could do, well, for one thing, it's not a whole big screen. I think it's just a few lines of text. But, if they could do enhanced reality, is that the right term or whatever? But, I mean, if I was augmented reality. If I was in a strange city, which I'm not usually in, but if I was out walking around and said, you know, is there a Italian bistro within three blocks of me, or whatever business you wanted, or if you looked around and if you looked at a storefront and it told you what that was, of course, there's usually signs on a storefront to tell you anyway, but I think this is coming, but right now there's no directions or anything like that with it. It does let you interact with text messages, but they said if you get a text, it can't connect back to your phone, so it gives you another phone number through their servers. So you send it, you can send a text back to somebody, and it can be like, canned messages, like you have an appointment at 3:00 and you can send back, yes, I'll be there. But it'll come back from a completely different phone number, which, and I'm going not so much by the website now as a review that I saw earlier today.
Hey,
so
if it works like the pictures show, then that's already a step ahead of Google Glass, because on the pictures really looked like that first advertisement for Google Glass that, you know, we never got that functionality.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's kind of like my Mycroft AI. A lot of the stuff in the far as I know, I haven't played with it much lately, but far as I know, most of the, I think they're going to fix it in version 2 supposedly, but so I guess you bought version 1 to finance version 2. But a lot of the stuff like making an intercom or whatever, then I don't think it ever really found its way into it, or they wait for somebody else to write it for them. So, you know, I didn't realize that the Google Glass didn't realize the potential, what they're trying to advertise. But this does at least show the price for the technology is coming down. The basic glasses without prescription are $600. Now, I can't imagine too many people don't already wear prescription glasses would be interested. It didn't say how much add on or whatever, but, you know, what, Google Glass was like at least $1,100, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was something like that.
So these seem to be like a very interesting concept. I haven't seen all of its functionality. I'm just what I've seen quickly on this website. But, I mean, a lot of it seems to be about the same as, you know, most wearables are. So any of the watches, any of the capability that you would have through the watches. So I don't see how or why it would be set in a way where you have to be able to respond. You have to use a different service for it. I mean, the technology to be able to do that seems to be out there. So I'm not sure why they're not leveraging the already existing technology to, you know, respond to text messages.
Well, with the first gen, it might just be an integration issue.
Fair.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd probably have to work out some kind of deal with carriers or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, because and I am, now that I've opened my mouth, I've blinked on the name of the open source wearable watch. I even own one, and I can't remember the name of it right at the moment. Pebble. Pebble had that capability.
Right.
And that's one thing the reviewer said. This really doesn't do anything that a smartwatch doesn't already do. The other thing that would bother me is the interface is through this ring thing, and it's rather bulky. It looks a lot like your thumb mice that you can get, you know, so it's like a joystick and a press down sort of thing.
Yeah, that seems to be a bit much. It should just be like maybe a quick notification, or even just like you were talking about, augmented reality HUD or something.
Now, didn't Google Glass actually work with eye movements, eye tracking?
I'm not sure. I know it didn't really live up to the hype, because all it ended up being was a tiny screen up in edgier vision.
I mean, this is not something I'm going to want to run out and spend $600 on. But, yeah, in 10 years, five years probably, if I go in to get my new prescription glasses, they say, yeah, we could add this for $200. Yeah, I would probably do it.
I guess it would depend for me on how well everybody else could see the information being given to me.
That's a real good point, too. Which leads me to my point of, I think for us who aren't glasses wearers, I think making something that's almost like a sunglasses style, or something that's a little more stylish, as opposed to something that makes you look like you wear glasses when you don't.
Well, right, and that's another thing. They said that you can't see the screen outside unless you have sunglasses, and the sunglasses are clip-ons.
Really?
Yeah, well, you can kind of understand that. I mean, if the light outside is brighter than the light, you know, being emitted onto your lenses, then obviously you wouldn't be able to see that light.
Well, right. It's harder to see your cell phone, you know. Well, most modern cell phones are pretty good about it. But, yeah, there have been lighting places where I've got in that sort of washed it out a little bit. And a lot of the earlier displays were, you know, hard to see outside. The other thing that would really get me is, and this is just personal, I don't know why, but I need a nose piece that crosses the top of my nose. I could not stand the ones that are just on the side. They will cut holes in my nose.
Well, most nose pieces are removable and changeable.
Well, I'd have to know that. I'd have to go in and say, hey, can you put on a custom nose piece? You'd think for $800, you know, which is what I'm sure it would be by the time you get prescription lenses. And, right. You know, why can't you make them photo gray?
Right.
Well, that's lenses. It depends, yeah, but I guess, okay, it depends on how it projects. I mean, is it a projection from the arm? Is it a projection from the frame inward? That would be almost impossible.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure what it does is that little triangular piece on the right-hand side that sticks out, you know, is projecting forward onto your lens.
Then what matter does it does what does it matter what lens you have then?
Well, like I said, I'm just not gonna carry around a clip-on set of sunglasses every time I go outside.
Right. Just get some transitions.
Well, right now that's not an option. So, like I said, this is technology in its infancy. This will eventually get where, you know, it is just commonplace. You'll have them in contacts.
Right. And, you know, watching TV shows will be like listening to podcasts. You'll do it everywhere.
I don't know how safe that'll be. Right. I think with all things, the only way this is going to become commonplace is as soon as they can figure out a way to make it cheap. As soon as it becomes cheap and available to everybody, then it'll start to open up.
Well, I mean, smartwatches, you know, have come down from a little bit, at least, from where they started at. So this will at least creep downwards. And like I said, eventually this will become ubiquitous. You will not have these big quarter-inch wide frames on the, you know, side pieces to support the technology. It'll just be like people wouldn't know, and then it'll get to be where people just assume. But like you said, Honky, if you're not an eyeglasses wearer, I can't imagine, like I said, eventually it would come to contacts. But if you don't need corrective lenses at all, I can't imagine why somebody, you know, glasses are a hassle.
Yeah, but if it's going to get you information quickly, then a lot of people will.
Now, let's bring it down to the wearables. Do we think that things like the Apple iWatch or even like the Samsung watch kind of spurred on the popularity of some wearables? Or you think that it was something that people were willing to spend the money on to begin with, no matter who was the brand that put it out, and now that there are other companies that can put out cheaper ones, then it's become much more of a popular item.
Has it, though? I mean, are sales up on smartwatches?
I've noticed, a lot more people just looking around, a lot more people who have smartwatches.
But they've also been on the market longer, too. Is everybody wearing a new smartwatch, or are they wearing something that's been around for a couple of years? I mean,
does it matter if it's new?
You're not getting new technology on your... Well, sales-wise, it kind of does. And because, you know, the more something sells, the more development happens for it, the more that it improves, the more that you see on the market.
But let's take that same idea and add it to these glasses, though. Let's say Samsung or Apple decides they're going to put out one of these glasses and have them as just like sporty sunglasses. Instead of the wearable watch, you get like a sporty sunglasses.
Yeah, I could see it doing well.
But I think that might push the market forward, and then you'd have the a lot more. You'd have those people who would spend the higher premiums for the Apple or Samsung versions, and then you'd have the people who just want the basic functionality of those things and going for the cheaper versions. But there would become more cheaper versions out there, and the cheaper versions would be more prevalent, There's a good chance that something like this right here, will just die on the table like the Google Glass did, unless somebody else takes the ball and runs with it.
Well, Yeah, but even if it dies on the table, there'll be another generation of it in a couple of years where somebody will try again, and maybe the next person will get it right. Because this is something that people want. You saw it when Google Glass put out their first couple of ads, and they were showing the text floating in front of you and the slightly augmented reality and the things that you could do with it, and having all of the knowledge of the world basically at your fingertips. I mean, just being able to, you know, look at somebody and see their social profile right there and know who they are and everything about them that's available, that is something people would pay for.
That is something that sounds horrifying.
Oh, it is. No. But what's the difference in the world we live in now? Somebody tells me their name, I can go look them up on social media. Anymore with face recognition technology, you know, you snap a picture of somebody, you plug it into, not the Facebook one, but the Google, the picture analyzer, well, how it can search specifically for pictures, find a match. No? Anybody?
I know what you mean.
Right. But you could use that and find a person, find out basically everything about them that is available online. It just takes a little longer.
And, you know, not even for that, but acquaintances or something like that, because I'll probably put that in the show notes, too. I found out that the actor played Dr. McKay on Stargate Atlantis. Saw an old post from him, well, not that old, a couple weeks, on YouTube today. And apparently he's a huge geek like us, has 3D printers. I don't know if he's Linux geek or open source or anything. I expect he might not, you know, might at least know what that is.
I met him. It was either Sun City Sci-Fi Con or El Paso Comic Con.
And he seems, you know, on his YouTube channel, he seems just almost exactly like the character he played.
Yeah.
But he was talking about, he has social fears of being a Hollywood actor, going to parties, and you walk up to somebody you've met once, and you're supposed to remember who they are.
Right, exactly.
He said that would be great. Of course, you know, it'd be so false for everybody. You know, because everybody would be doing, Bob, hey, how's the wife, Alicia?
Yeah, but at the same note, I think that also means that maybe don't put as much stuff on social media.
Well, people tell you that now, and it doesn't stop other people from doing it.
Right. I don't think anybody has a Facebook account. You know, they're not going to know it's your wife's name, that your kids are Ben and Jerry, you know, whatever.
Well, my ex-wife makes a living doing just that. She does skip tracing for a debt collector, and they literally pay her to sit there on Facebook and find friends of friends and family members who don't have the security levels on their account, look for a picture of, oh, hey, look, Bob tagged Fred in his picture from work. Look at the label on his work shirt. I know where he works now. Now we can go after him.
Your wife is evil. Ex-wife.
But that sounds like an interesting job, though.
Oh, it sounds fascinating.
She likes it.
But yeah, I mean, we're going to have to accept probably a different level of privacy and more knowledge. And this was kind of the point this actor, is it Dan or Dave Hewitt, whatever, was making. Okay, yeah. This is making inroads against privacy, but it's also, you know, doing so much for us. It's a trade-off. You know, we got to watch out. You know, he even mentioned, and not a lot of people were probably knowledgeable of this, that, you know, he talked about when the original Google cars went out and started mapping, roads and stuff, that they were also, you know, they were also looking for open Wi-Fi and cataloging that. So, you know, and they claimed, we'll use that for location. And they can know if you've got GPS, you don't need to get my Wi-Fi to figure out where you are. So, you know, everybody thought that was a little sketchy, but really, I think beyond the tech community, that I don't think that got any play.
Well, that's because most people have the good sense not to leave their Wi-Fi open.
Oh, I think you would be amazed. At least 5 years ago when it happened.
Fair.
And the people that did, they set it up with WPS, which is almost as bad as leaving it open.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, most of the people, when I go in their houses and do work for them, they have never been to the configuration page for their router. You know, they get their router from their ISP. Oh, and here, you know, here's a 6-digit code on the back. That's my password.
The one thing I could say about that is that the 6-digit codes on the back of the most of the routers that come from, at least from the Comcast ones that I've seen, are so very obscure. I don't think that, like, it would... You could not, I don't think you could do a dictionary attack on these things. Unless there's some master list somewhere, or they start using, it's not all just random, but it is just a large, long string of random numbers that's the password.
Well, most of them have done that, but, you know, now, but, you know, I said five years ago, if there was one, it was, you know, it was 6 characters and all digits. You know, I'm sure you could run through those possibilities in 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. What I'm finding is that they also have the little button on the top that, you know, all you have to do is click the button and it click the connect button on whatever device you have and it's supposed to connect.
Well, that's WPS, and it is not at all secure.
That's WPS?
Yes. And, yeah, he's right. Completely insecure.
Yeah, I know WPS is insecure. I should check to see what the hell I did with the... I'm pretty sure I have WPA2 set up on my mother-in-law's router, but I used the touch button for... I might have used WPS for the printer, though, just because it was a lot easier than trying to punch in the number just for the to set up the networking on the printer itself.
Oh, I saw this weeks ago. I don't know how credible it is. You know, headline, government has quantum computers, so we're toast anyway.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
Okay, so I said Focal's good step forward. It's not where I'm putting my money down yet, but, you know, maybe give it 5 years.
Yeah, I'm all for any sort of the augmented reality or like a HUD. I like to see more of that in cars.
Yeah, well, you can kind of get that now with projection systems. I know that they're out there that they'll project even Google Maps onto your front windshield.
Right, and like I said, I think I'm going to have a lot of that, and I haven't done a thing on it in the last 2 weeks when I get the Amazon. Or not Amazon, Android backup camera installed and on, you know, hanging off my rear view mirror. It's, you know, it'll look clunky, but less clunky than something sitting up on top of the dash. You know, because I said it had GPS, it had, you know, this.
You have to trust AR a lot to use it while driving, though. I mean, somebody hacks that, and the next thing you know, you're seeing random things flying at your windshield.
Well, that's part of it. You know, it does not, by default, have any kind of internet connectivity. Yeah, it does have a SIM slot, and I wondered about that, you know. I don't know if I can move a SIM slot over from my phone. You know, if there's one app I wanted, because like I said, as far as I know, I could install Netflix on the darn thing.
That would be cool, but probably not a good idea.
No, I am not saying it's a good idea. You know, there might, like I said, there might be one thing that if it was a standalone, but, you know, a lot of stuff would need connectivity. And, you know, I would be afraid with this. You know, what is their security and giving it 24/7 connectivity?
Right.
Yeah, and I think the augmented stuff on the windshield, I wouldn't use the entire windshield, just maybe like a small section on the bottom of like the windshield. Just keep like a, either it's a like a small section on the bottom or a small section on like the top where you put like a small, you know, you have it tinted a bit, so, you know, just a small section that's tinted that you can reflect some just general information, whether it's, you know, having put the speed, your speedometer there, put something like Google Maps, but like a little bit of a cut down version of Google Maps, a little less graphical version of Google Maps. I don't know. Just even Google Maps and the speedometer, I think, is mostly what I need when driving, and put that up on the small section of the windshield, not like the entire windshield.
Right. It's nice now that Google is providing the speed limits in maps.
Right.
And actually, I think there are states where HUDs are illegal, but.
And laws can be interpreted differently, too, because I know here in Texas, there's a law against anything that obstructs your vision in the front windshield. So would that be considered to be obstructing your vision? If cop wanted to be an a-hole, then yeah.
Oh, exactly. Case in point on that topic, not a technology thing, but... like if you carry any kind of folding knife in New York City, cops and prosecutors are trained on how to flip that open with one hand, because you can't do that in New York City. You know, so even if you can't flip your knife open with one hand, if they can in court, you know, you can go to jail for years.
I always thought the rules with the pocket knives was it can't be a blade larger than your palm, and I believe...
No, I'd really start messing with them. I would get a paratrooper knife. Try and open that with one hand, please.
Well, I was going to say, usually the law is on a folding knife is four inches. Well, carrying concealed. You know, if you got more than 4 inches, then you've got to carry that like on a holster on your belt. But this whole flipping the knife open, I mean, you know, yeah, if it's a knife made to go, you know, flip open, fine. But apparently they've made a business of, you know, knives not made to be easily opened with one hand, and they just, you know, practice on it to get you. And that's not, you know, well, okay, that there's probably a one-sided YouTube thing that I watched that is the knife equivalent of the NRA, you know, and saying however the whole system in New York City was based to get people, you know, just carrying a pocket knife.
I know that... was it Massachusetts that Amazon will not ship any pocket knife that has the spring assist opening to it to Massachusetts and New York?
Well, these weren't even spring assist. This is just if you can get your thumb on the blade and push it open.
Like the little nubby?
Anything.
And this is way afield of the concept of our show, but I'm just saying, you know, that you got to watch out in certain jurisdictions for cops who are, you know, just looking to make a conviction.
I think it was a standard rule. If they want to get you for something, they'll get you for something. If they don't like your bumper stickers, they'll get you for something.
Well, I don't think most cops are like that. I think most cops are great people.
Oh, I'm not saying that.
Not 90%, you know, but that there is that percentage that is just in there to go swaggering around and lord over people.
I'm not saying that they're out to get you. I'm just saying that if they feel like they have a reason to get you, then they're going to find a reason, and it's not that hard to find a reason.
Well, exactly. And you know, I think the cameras are for both ways are probably the best thing ever invented, you know, so that it's a lot harder for them to say, you know, you're just standing there minding your own business and they grab you and say, why'd you take a swing at me?
Right.
And we're not a political podcast, you know, it's just saying, and most cops are nothing like that. But you know, this stuff does.
There's
happen.
Always one, and it's always the one you remember.
I mean, it's never happened to me. I have never had an experience with an officer that I could say that they did anything inappropriate. And there's been times I've been the one definitely in the wrong.
Okay, do we want to get back to tech?
Yes.
Please, let's do.
Okay. I guess that makes it my turn?
Yes.
Well, I'm thinking I need to build my tower. It was formerly my gaming PC that I always had out in my office, and it's got a AMD 6350 in it, so I've had it for a while, 7 years or so, I think. But it's now overheating, and I thought that the problem was the fan, so I replaced the CPU cooler, and that fan was dying. I mean, it had survived like 3 computers before it got to this one, but it was one of the blue orbs, and you can't get those anymore. So I got something similar, because I know that particular motherboard CPU combo also has problems with the Northbridge overheating. But I was checking things out and trying to figure out why it was randomly shutting off under load. And at idle, it was running at very low temperatures, you know, 23, 24 Celsius. And yeah, I understand that sometimes the reading off of those motherboards is also incorrect at temperatures below 45. But, you know, I started using YouTube DL to test it, and I would start downloading something, and it would start transcoding it after it all got downloaded, or converting it after it all got downloaded. And my CPU temperature went from nothing to 65 to 70, and a couple minutes later, shut down. So I'm thinking it's the CPU because of how old it is and everything that it, you know, it has been through in my various garages. So I'm debating on whether or not I need to rebuild the whole system from the ground up, or if I just want to get like a 9350 and put it in there. And it's a tough call. Do I want to, because it got converted to my server when my old server died last year. So do I want to make it into a proper desktop again and get like a 1060 or a 1060 Ti or something better and build around that? Or do I want to keep it as just a server?
One quick question. If you're saying that the temperature is reading that low, is there a possibility that since the box is really old, that there's something that the temperature gauge on the motherboard might be off?
No, it's actually a known issue.
Really?
With the AMD boards, like all of them in that age range.
That they just start overheating like crazy?
No. With the low temperature. They don't start reading proper temperature until they hit about 45 degrees Celsius. So anything under that and it's off.
Like, does it
not the correct temperature?
Does it almost feel like warm to the touch?
Oh, it got hot.
Okay.
Yeah, it actually was overheating. And, you know, I know how to put on a CPU cooler, so I know that's not the issue. And it's seated properly, and I even replaced the thermal paste on the Northbridge, so that shouldn't be an issue either.
So it's pretty much a stock cooler then?
No, not a stock cooler. And after the Blue Orb, I picked up something that was very similar to it. It is a downward-facing fan, but it's basically all heat pipe.
Yeah, if you're throwing that much cooling at it, it's hard to tell you what to say because on something like that, you you strip everything out, you know, to the point where it'll at least post, and then
well,
after
turn
that,
back on.
Then just your general troubleshooting. You know, if you got something crashing, you pull the hard drives, and you know, and then you start you break it down to CPU, memory, and motherboard, and start adding stuff back in. And when you know, you can't take it down any farther than CPU, memory, and motherboard. So, you know, at that point, it's kind of a crapshoot. Say, you know, telling the customer, yeah, this is the part you need to replace.
Right. Well, it's either the CPU or the motherboard. But yeah, it's not going to be anything other than those two, because I was watching the temperature on it. It definitely wasn't, you know, one of the hard drives overheating. It wasn't the RAM overheating. It was a sensor for the CPU that was showing high temperatures.
Well, for older equipment, you're probably not going to want to keep the CPU and upgrade to a newer motherboard.
If I'm going to upgrade the motherboard, I'm going to upgrade the CPU. And then that probably means going DDR4, which means I'm building a new PC.
Exactly.
Then I guess you're going into the question of, is it worth building your own PC or buying something else?
It might be worth it to get something that's relatively new off of Facebook Marketplace or something like that. $100 to $500 range. And then allow myself the ability later on to upgrade, add more components, whatever I need to do, which is, you know, the point of having a desktop.
Right.
See, I kind of miss the days of about the 5 years where we had the 486 and the same number of pins and everything. And if I had a question with the customer's equipment, I could probably swap it into one of my machines and test it out. You know, now everything is so divergent. You know,
right. Not only are there different socket types, but even when the socket types are exactly the same, you still have to worry about the firmware that's on the motherboard itself.
Exactly. In fact, I had one time that it was days in between working on it and turned the customer's computer on. Oh, it worked just fine. Okay, fine. I get back to him. Then realized later that I'd given him my faster CPU out of one of my machines.
Oops.
Yeah. So I'm still figuring out what I want to do with that. I mean, in the end, I might just pick up something off of Facebook Marketplace and upgrade it. And I don't know. The numbers on the 1050, the GTX 1050s just aren't all that great. Then none of the numbers off of the RX line look all that great on, say, Passmark or whatever. Then you hear from people that the RX line is actually really good when you're looking at the 580s.
Well, for servers, you know, I got this gaming machine for $300. If you're not,
right,
you know, if you're gonna build a server, you can go to that same, you know, Walmart site and get something without a discrete video card for a lot less than that. In fact, I was going to throw that out there. I forget the name of it. There was this Google Assistant replacement that was open source, and first encountered it at PenguinCon probably 4 or 5 years ago. And at the time, it was all self-contained, but you needed like an i5 running in your house to be the back end.
Well, they're talking about doing something similar with Mycroft, aren't they?
Yes. Well, I don't know. I talked to and I never got that interview out. I need to do it. But I talk, you know, that's one of the things I suggested to him when, oh, the guy was up in Kansas City, I know. But when he was involved with Mycroft and he left. But I said, you guys need to talk to these people because you've gotten a lot of criticism, you know, that you're going, you know, you're going out to these external APIs to do your voice to character conversion. And here's these people have come up with their own software to do that. But like I said, at the time, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, buying an i5 would have been cost prohibitive. Right now, you know, if you get an i5 for $250, it's no, you know, it's maybe not something you would just throw the money away on. But if you're somebody paranoid that, you know, hey, I'm using Mycroft or I'm using Google Home, and it's going through Google APIs, and I'm using Alexa, and it's going through Amazon APIs, you know, it's doable now.
Right. Yeah, but like I said, I might also use it as a server and have it set up as a desktop, or yeah, maybe put it where my gaming laptop currently is, or just a monitor there, use up a bit less space.
Yeah, my file server is a Pi with an external drive, but I'm not sure if spinning Rust external USB drive, it's actually that much more energy efficient than if you actually bought an Intel box.
Yeah, but we're also using my server as, you know, a media server. And yeah, you can talk about using the Pi as a media server right up until, you know, you try to do the conversion from the Pi to an external device and then doing it to a second one.
What, you mean having it serve out twice?
Well, having one stream going to one computer and having another stream going to another computer.
Right, serving up two machines at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, I have mine set up as a media server, and it's not using Plex, but it seems to work well. But it's usually only going to one thing at a time. I don't have enough people, you know, calling down to it at a time. If I'm using it, it's pretty much just being, you know, we're watching a movie in the living room or something.
Are you using MB?
No, I use MediaTomb.
Okay. Does it do the conversion on the Plex side?
I don't have Plex. I have
on the server side. I mean, my bad.
I'm not sure. So, I usually connect to it through VLC on a Fire Stick. So, VLC might be doing the conversion.
Right. Or, yeah, I guess it could just be...
Because I know I can do it either through MediaTomb. MediaTomb will... I can get it to work through... the UPnP, and then just have it go through, instead of VLC, have it go through my DVD player, and then, or I can have it run through VLC, but through VLC I can either find the stuff either through the Samba Share or through MediaTomb.
Yeah. Okay. I like having a server.
And no one's saying you shouldn't have a server. Especially for the amount of things that you do. Between that and the audio program that you use?
Oh, Librasonic.
Librasonic, that's right.
Yeah, Librasonic's awesome. And BT Sync on there too. And I actually have two Plex servers set up on my server. One for, you know, everybody to watch movies and television shows on, and then one just for podcasts.
Now you're pulling things, you have a script to pull down the latest episodes of things off of YouTube and then put that on too, right?
Although there have been a couple of write-ups, and I think somebody on here actually showed how you can still pull the actual RSS from the video channel on YouTube, and I haven't tried it yet because my setup works just fine. I generate the script, I generate the cron job, and once a week or once an hour if I want, it goes out there, looks to see if there's a new video, and then downloads it.
Now, just out of curiosity, I mean, if you do use YouTube DL to just pull the audio, could you not use Plex for it and use just use LibreSonic? How about that? Put it in a separate folder and use LibreSonic if you use YouTube DL just to pull down the audio stream for it.
It is possible. I mean, LibreSonic does do best with audio. It does. It did have the video functionality because it was originally what I was using to grab my podcasts instead of, well, the ones that had RSSs. I was using LibreSonic to download them, and I was using it to view ones from YouTube where they didn't have RSSs. But yeah, I explained in an earlier episode about why I switched away from that, and the functionality has basically gone away to simply view videos in LibreSonic. But yeah, if I were to strip it down to just the audio, I could do that. But I mean, with tech thing, I kind of want to see what's going on. And two of my shows aren't on anymore. Know How, you really wanted to see what they were doing because they did a lot of drawing on a whiteboard to show you how things worked.
All right, that's fair. I guess that really all depends on how you're consuming your YouTube.
Yeah, and I still enjoy the... Ben Hex left now, so it's no longer the Ben Hex Show, but I still call it the Ben Hex Show because that's what I've always known it as. But it's Element 14's... I don't even know what the show's called now. But they still do a lot of, you know, tinkering and making and showing you how to do things, and I really like to see the hands-on. Speaking of which, I ordered the controller board for my 3D printer today. It should be in here in about a week, and I am looking at picking up an enclosure for it, which would hopefully prevent this problem from happening in the future.
Well, and the enclosure, too, might help with the if you're running into temperature problems as to why you're having the flaky prints.
Right, the brittle prints, yeah.
Right.
I'm hoping that, too, that it probably was a layering issue. It was cooling too quickly and didn't have a chance. One layer here or there didn't have a chance to adhere to the previous layer before solidifying. Hopefully it'll help.
Hopefully. I got to work on mine.
I want to get mine up and running again.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a good excuse to be out in the garage lifting weights, you know, watching at least the print start well enough that I knew it wasn't going to break.
It's kind of mesmerizing to watch after a while, isn't it?
It is. And then some of the prints, when they were printing, even my wife commented that they just sounded musical.
I'm surprised nobody's done that. We've had like Star Wars theme played on floppy drives or whatever. Yeah, I'm surprised nobody set up to make music on 3D printers.
Probably just because of the mess it would make.
Well, yeah, you just have the actuators going off.
That's true.
Or somebody could reprogram it that way.
I mean, I've seen the whole symphony thing with little tiny drones. And then, of course, you know, Disney does the whole thing instead of fireworks. You know, they have drones in the sky.
That would be cool. Oh, and I did want to mention that this year, because it's in Irving, I am planning on going to Texas Linux Fest. I heard he told my boss I'm taking that time off.
Cool.
Well, maybe I'll see you there. I've been wanting to go to Texas Linux Fest one of these years.
Yeah, well, it's within an hour of my house.
Nice.
That's May 31st and June 1st.
So it'd probably be that instead of sell for me this year, so.
Yeah, that's really all I got. Other than I included a link for Netminer to a 5.1 channel external surround sound card that's USB. It's older, but it works, and it's only like $8.
Was there a Tilts this week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, we lived, but I don't know if it made it out. I didn't see it in my podcatcher.
Yeah, I haven't seen it published yet.
I know a couple people were recording, but I don't think... Was Dan there? I don't think Dan was there this time.
Yeah, it was kind of light. I even jumped in at the end, and then Gorkon told me he couldn't hear me very good, and I reset my uplink and then looked at the time, said, now if I jump back in, I will just delay everybody who's wanting to go home.
Are we 2 weeks behind? I thought it was 7:96 last time. It'll get published eventually.
Yeah, usually if Dan's not there, it's usually like a week behind.
Yeah, two will get published at the same time.
Right.
But yeah, it did get recorded.
Okay.
And 50 was there.
And 50 was there.
I was sort of half there. Ran out of beer, decided no, I didn't want to drive into town, so I was drinking a big bottle of rum. So
yeah, that'll do it.
I was
okay. Like I said, that's everything I got.
Now, Bookworm wanted to talk about his SBC that he bought.
Yeah, I picked up a new little single board computer, a Libre computer. It was like $45 on Amazon, so I went ahead and, you know, that was my Christmas gift to myself. It's a 4 ARM Cortex A53 1.5 gigahertz processor, supports 4K video out on HDMI, 2 gigs of RAM, and it has an IR receiver built into it, but it fits into a Raspberry Pi case for either a Pi 2 or Pi 3. It's got the 4 USB and Ethernet all on the same side, so that fits right in. I got a couple of Raspberry Pis running, you know, Pi Hole and Nextcloud, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with this now.
Well, Dor had been talking about an image just for OwnCloud, or Nextcloud rather. But I looked at it, and there's a version for the Pi, and there's a version for the thing after the Pine. There's the Pro, which I didn't know about until a few weeks ago, and then there's the regular one, the rock chip. There's a rock chip version. And there's more than one version, and even a virtual machine version, but there's a rock chip version and a Pi version, and there's not one for the original Pine. But I'm thinking dragging out my old Pine out of the closet and installing Diet Pi on it and setting it up for all the different servers that I would like to have in the house, like Nextcloud.
I've really enjoyed having my little Raspberry Pi running Nextcloud. It's a neat little thing. As soon as I get home, my phone syncs right up if there's been any file changes. Laptop too, as soon as I fire it up, it automatically syncs. I've had no problem with it on the Pi 2. But this little board, they've got images on the manufacturer's website, and I put a link in the notes. It even supports Android 8 or 7.1. And they've got pre-built images for RetroPie for gaming, LibreELEC, supports Ubuntu 18.04, and Debian 9 Stretch.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking of. If you wanted to, just because of the fact that it has the little IR on it, as to whether you want to use it for like LibreELEC or CoreELEC.
That's kind of where I was leaning, because I just got my first 4K TV and I don't have any media, and this would be something I could connect directly to it and see how it runs that way.
Yeah, either LibreELEC or the Android, just because I think if you're going to do something like Netflix or, you know, something like that, like Prime Video or something, you're probably going to be better off using the Android for it.
Yeah, that's
now,
very true.
The specs say up to 2 gig DDR3. What do you have on yours?
2 gig DDR3.
Nice.
Yeah, this is they call it Le Potato. The previous version only had 1 gig.
I am impressed with the amount of images they do have available for it, though.
And the GPU does seem, an upgrade compared to most of your single board computers.
The thing that really kind of sold me on it, I'd been kind of shopping around for a new single board computer, and the thing that really sold me on this one was the form factor, because I can use one of my old Raspberry Pi cases and just drop this one in.
See, this is the last thing I need to hear about is another single board computer.
Yeah. You're welcome.
How much does this one run?
$45.
Not bad.
Now, does that include power adapter, or do you have to buy all that stuff separate?
All that separate. It's just the board. But I, you know, pick up power adapters and USB cables and heck, DVI cables at yard sales all the time nowadays.
And Dora would want me to ask this, is it USB or barrel connector?
USB, of course.
See, I'm on the other side from Dora on this because there's a limit on how many volts you can get through the USB. You know, if you put it away in the closet, just wrap the cord around it and you won't lose it.
Yeah.
Which probably when I go to dig out my Pine 64, I probably won't, the adapter won't be anywhere to be found.
Now, have you seen the specs for the Odroid N2, though?
I have recently.
That's not the Intel one, is it?
No.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard of that one.
I know the name Odroid, but I don't know that specific model. The only other single board computer I'd been looking at was the one from, was it Asus? Their Tinker board, but that one's like $100 or just under 100.
And again, Honky, you are a bastard because I don't need to hear about any new single board computers.
I just put a link in the show notes. You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm looking at it on hard kernel right now.
Yeah, Odroid makes some good stuff from what I hear.
Right.
4 gigabyte model for $79.
Yeah, so this is a 6-core and Mali G52 GPU. 4 gig DDR4. Wow. Oh, I just scrolled down. I do love this, the Odroid's, you know, let's just make the case a heatsink.
Yeah, I like that.
It does look kind of cool.
Yeah, if it comes like, just like that, then that's pretty cool. Especially because it has like the little slides on the side if you want to like put it on a little rack.
Yeah, or even probably multiprocessor system or and this thing looks like it could be a rock chip killer. Cluster computer is what I was thinking, but they're talking in the text about the quad core A73 CPU and the dual core A53 cluster.
Well, it's got, it seems interesting because it's a hexa-core with 4 1.8 gigahertz ARM Cortex A73 CPUs and 2 1.9 gigahertz ARM Cortex A53 cores.
Right. They did have that for cell phone technology for, you know, there doesn't seem to be that much difference in speed, but I do know Linux kernel unlocked, where Android would use only, you know, one type of core or the other type of core, you know, the Linux kernel unlocked, you know, using hexa-core, all of them at once. Oh, wow, 4 USB 3.0s?
Yeah.
You guys were talking about the Pi and made me start remembering that I have a project that I want to do. Not with a Pi. Well, there are projects I want to do with a Pi, but this one is I want to test out the Pi Hole Docker image, which is x86 compatible.
Cool. Oh, active cooling fan connector. Have we seen that in an SBC before? Well, we've seen SBCs from Odroid with active cooling before.
I think the Tinker board has it as well.
Yeah, weren't there a couple of Odroids that came with a fan attached to them?
Yes.
Quick side note. So I found my show notes from when I set up the Etherpad and hooked up and connected the MySQL Docker container, and I put that into the show notes if you want to look at that and see if that'll help you along.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Oh, also gigabit Ethernet on this, supposedly.
Yeah.
Wonder if, have to do a little more research, see if it's true gigabit. wouldn't do me much good. I don't think anything else on my network is gigabit.
Yeah, I think before I buy another single board computer, I got to come up with a plan to use some of the ones I have, though.
Right, but this one would certainly take care of about anything you wanted to do, I would think.
Right.
How did you come up with this, man? Because I've heard absolutely no traffic on this one.
Oddly enough, I find that on my phone, if I just open up a blank page, it gives me a bunch of, I'm going to guess, related articles to things that I've searched for before. And one of the first ones was the Lilliputing article for this.
Nice. Should be noted, the 4 gig model is $79.
Right. 2 gig is $69, 4 gig is $79. Oh, the 2 gig is $63, the 4 gig is $79.
All right, it's starting to get late.
I second that motion.
Yeah, I think we've exhausted all the topics, haven't we?
Probably. All right.
Or the topics have exhausted us.
So our next recording date will be March 1st, 2019. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We would like to thank Delwyn for the use of the Mumble server and for the bot module in our IRC channel. If you type in .ns, it'll give you the date for our next show recording. We would also like to thank 00 Web Hosts for web hosting. Hopefully everything comes back up. Finally, we'd like to give a special thanks to Kay Wisher, Father Finch, and Tony Bemis for all their help and support over the years. I'd also like to give a shout-out to Dave Morris because his fixed tags script, Perl script that he came up with is something that has been... has been added to my, it's a key part of the script that I run to do the show editing. So I want to remember to give a shout out to him. I have been Honky Magoo. With me tonight has been Bookworm.
Have a good night, folks.
5150.
So long, folks. And Honky, I added the link to the hard kernel site for the Odroid in too to your show notes.
Excellent. Joe?
Good night.
And Netminer.
Good night, folks. See you in March.
Have a good one.
I haven't listened to the previous episode yet. Is there something going on with the website?
I don't think so. Is there something going on with the website?
It's not loading. I mean, it's taking forever, and then it gives a fail message.
There shouldn't be anything wrong with the website.
Maybe it's just me.
No, because I think I'm having the same problem, too. Evening, Joe.
Hey there, Honky. What's up?
Not much. How we doing?
All right. Testing out a couple things.
Did I hear you got another new mic?
Yeah, I picked up the, a second new mic. Picked up the Samson Meteor. I was testing out the audio jack on it to see if I could just have my headphone hooked to it too, and doesn't look like it. Maybe that's why I got it for $35.
Maybe.
Okay, doesn't really hamper me much. I mean, the mic portion still works.
And that's probably all that matters.
Yeah, I can do some more testing later. What you been up to?
Sadly, nothing. I mean, I was the last week I was on vacation, and it was actually vacation where I still sent my kids to, daycare and school and stuff. So I actually had time at the house by myself, but I actually spent most of that being sick. And this past week, I think I'm still just trying to recover because I haven't done anything. It's pretty much just been go to work, come home, make dinner, get the kids to bed, and then crash. This past Friday, I found out that The Expanse Season 3 was available on Prime, and I've been binge-watching the hell out of that.
Haven't watched The Expanse.
Really good show.
I will think about watching it.
Yeah, it's in my I'll get to it eventually list.
Yeah, that list got a little long for me, and I had to switch that to, well, if I really feel like watching something, I'll watch it.
Sadly, I've kind of hit a point where I'm not sure what I want to watch next.
Well, what haven't you seen?
There's a lot of things, but there's a lot of things I think is gonna. It's there's a lot of shows that a lot of people say, you know, oh, you gotta watch this, oh, you gotta watch this, but I gotta Breaking Bad. A lot of people love Breaking Bad.
A lot of people love Game of Thrones.
Right, but Game of Thrones is gonna be harder for me to get.
I just wasn't interested in it.
I watched, a lot of people like Breaking Bad. I tried to make it through the first episode, and I couldn't finish the first episode.
Yeah, well, Black Lightning isn't the greatest show on the planet, and the first episode doesn't really do it all that much justice, but the rest of it's decent. It's watchable.
I've watched all the first season of Black Lightning. I haven't watched I haven't watched any of the newer seasons of the CW DC. I've caught up to last season, but the most recent stuff...
I'm behind on most of it, like by two or three seasons.
I'm waiting for... I figured I can't watch it week to week anymore, so I'm just going to wait until it all comes on to Netflix and then binge watch them all when they come to Netflix.
Yeah. Even then, I just haven't been catching up. I want the next Bright movie to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be cool. Though I had mixed feelings about the first one.
They've been talking about it, you know, since the day it came out, since I think before it came out, but nothing's happened with it, so.
It got really badly panned, but, you know, it still sounds like they're planning on making a sequel. I liked it.
Hey, it made them money.
I did watch first episode of Doom Patrol this morning.
Oh, is that out? Obviously it is if you watched it, but are they doing it episode by episode?
Yeah, I think they're skipping next week, and then the next one's in March. It was just pretty DC.
Gotcha.
Yeah, pretty much just the origin story for all of the actors that were in the Titans episode. Plus, they've added Crazy Jane. And I found out. I don't know if this is restricted to Fedora, because I haven't heard anybody else mention it. Anytime I have trouble exiting from Mumble, it looks like I'm going to have to reset up all my presets, because I had to do push to talk, I had to do the certificate, and just heard a notification. I need to go turn notifications off.
Is it in some kind of... What? I'm talking to somebody else, JoJo. Configuration file?
Well, it must be. Probably if I found where the file was, I could copy it out and then, you know, copy it back in every time it got munched.
Well, for some reason, I got to go through the audio wizard every time I start up Mumble on this computer.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. It acts just like it's never run Mumble before.
Hello, folks.
Hey, Netminer.
Hello.
Evening, sir.
Yeah, my brother has ordered his gaming computer from HP. It's a Voodoo.
Okay. Well, I've heard some good things about their newer gaming machines.
i7H, 12 gigs of memory, 120 gig SSD, and a terabyte storage drive.
Yeah, but how's it review? Because it's got all the parts, doesn't mean they go together well.
I don't know. I didn't buy it. I didn't finance it.
What graphics does it have?
1050s. I don't know. 1050M.
Can you still hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
No problem here.
Anybody keeping up with Star Trek Discovery?
I'm going to try to binge watch it all in a week at the end or something. So I'm not, or, you know, in 2 weeks. I got started on it because people were talking about it, you know, or... You know, so I probably paid for a month of the... Well, I guess you pay by the month or whatever, but I think I paid for two last year. I think I'm going to try to get it all done in a month this year.
Yeah, that's my plan, too.
Graphics, NVIDIA 1050 Ti.
Cool.
17-inch display.
Okay, so this is a mobile computer?
Yeah, it's a desktop replacement from what I understand. And I understand that HP bought Voodoo, so it's HP supported.
I don't know. I like my 32-inch monitor for gaming.
Well, you don't live in a truck.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't remembered that your brother's a truck driver. Yeah, that would tend to make some difference.
Bookworm.
This is episode 120?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
On the.
So, when did you last check out the website? Is it just today?
Just today, a few minutes ago.
Okay. Because I'm going to the web hosting site, and everything appears to be fine, but it won't, like, the login for WordPress won't load up, but everything on, like, the back end says it's running fine, and linuxlogcast.com just timed out for me with an error establishing a database connection, so I'm not sure what the hell is going on.
Might give it a day, see if it fixes itself, but other than that, you probably need to get a hold of them so people don't think we pod faded again.
Right.
And the email's still boogered, isn't it?
Well, right now it's just kind of a redirected to mine, and then from there I dispersed it out, but we haven't gotten any email in a while, so.
Well, there's some stuff that's been going on with WordPress that has been nasty to a lot of sites.
Well, hopefully that's not the issue, because we are running WordPress.
It's mostly just plugins, not the base install itself, though.
You know which plugins?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Yeah, well, there was a big flurry on YouTube about people saying, we don't want this upgrade, we don't want the change to the editor, we don't want the crap you're sending, and they Windows 10 them.
Oh yeah, the upgrade to the editor was horrible, but luckily they have a plugin for the older editor. Because once they changed that editor, I had no idea what the hell was going on with it anymore. I figured out the old one, and the old one was pretty simple. But they changed that thing, and it was absolute miserable.
Yeah, and I understand that everybody said, don't give us this crap. And the WordPress people says, oh, it's going to be wonderful, and you don't have any choice.
Well, like I said, luckily there was a plugin for the older editor.
I had a little adventure with Linux. I was trying to use a USB audio card, but evidently the C media cards that I have are not supported.
Really? I've never found an audio card that wasn't supported.
Yeah, I haven't had that much experience with USB audio, but every time I've used one, you just plugged it in and it just worked.
Well, C media's got a Linux driver, but it's on SourceForge, and it's dated 2016.
Can you add it to your kernel?
I haven't wanted to touch it. I have other machines where the audio works, but this is an old machine, and I haven't wanted to deal with it.
I have ordered $1 sound card or USB sound cards from China, and they work right out of the box. No problems.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be a driver issue, but I 2016 isn't that far back. I could see if it was like 2010 or something.
Well, I wanted to check in with folks here before I tried to mess with unpacking it.
Have you tried it on any other machines?
Yeah, I seem to have it working already, but I guess that machine just doesn't like it. Although I also have wondered about, I can upgrade to the hardware enablement kernel, the latest kernel, and see if that changes anything. But some good news. There's a audio card produced by a company called Antlion that's USB and specifically announces Linux support.
I picked up a used one from eBay a couple of months, well, not even a month back, and it was only like $7. It works, but I need a better USB cable. Sometimes I'm getting audio artifacts.
Well, since this thing is supposed to have better audio performance and better mic performance, I may try it out even for podcasts.
Now this one I think is just 5.1 audio out. Let me put it in. Are you on the show notes right now?
What show notes?
The show notes. Yeah, I pasted it in the show notes and now I'm going to put a link to the show notes in Mumble.
The show notes is the same link every week. Just changed the last number. Yeah. Last week it was 119. It's the exact same thing, link, but with 119 at the end. This week it's 120 at the end. We try to keep it consistent.
Hey, Honky, I found a list of the latest WordPress plugins that are vulnerable to attack. The main ones it looks like that were discovered within the last 3 to 5 days, there's one for cost estimation. That's an arbitrary file upload and delete is what the vulnerability it is. There's another one in that same cost estimation. It's an upload directory traversal. And there's also an authentication option injection. It would allow people to remotely access the page without authorization and simple social buttons.
Well, the good thing is I don't think we have any social buttons. So I think we're good.
What about next-gen gallery?
No. Basically, our plugins are like Blueberry Press for podcasting. The new one that just came out to give the older version of the editor. And there's like one or two other that were like default ones that WordPress had.
What about themes?
Yeah, there's a couple of themes. I think there's technically like 4 themes installed.
The newspaper theme has got a vulnerability that allows cross-site scripting.
I don't think we're using that one.
Elegant Themes, the Supreme Directory theme. But that one goes all the way back to last August. The other three, there's 3 others that are a little newer. The first 2 were, one's December and one's 2 days ago.
Hey, what time are we going to start?
Start what?
The show.
There's a show?
Okay, Rich. Because if we got a few minutes, I was going to go take care of something.
Yeah. Why don't you take care of what you want to take care of? I'm just...
All right. I'll be back in about 5 or 6 minutes.
Okay. Let us know when you're back. I'm just kind of looking around this, trying to figure out what the hell's going on with the site.
Also, I found that I don't quite have enough apt-foo to install a GUI on a server just yet.
I tried that one time on a Fedora box. I installed it as a server edition, but I wanted to put Plex, and that requires the GUI. And man, what a headache that was.
Well, I found there's a magic incantation where I can put the Ubuntu core on the machine, but trying to go individual pieces, I just don't know enough, including how to back out when it without going to the reinstall route.
No, I think I'm sorry. I wanted to say that there's a decent write-up on Manjaro page a while back. I'm not sure if they got rid of it, but they did a walkthrough on the Manjaro net install about just basically starting a system with the net install and then installing like each individual piece that you would need to get a GUI set up. Let me see if that's still available.
Okay, I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
The correct answer to that is always no.
Did I miss the show?
It's all over.
Darn. Now I'll have to play Borderlands.
Don't sound too excited about that. So, Netminer, I put a link into the show notes. The information on it says it's out of date. But I think that the idea is there. So no, first off, it's going to be, obviously, it's going to have Pac-Man instead of, you know, apt or whatever system you're running. But it, I think the, excuse me, once it goes through, it'll walk you through some of the initial setup. It should walk you through this, the pieces that you need to install first to get a GUI on a bare-bone system.
Well, this machine's basically a hacking machine anyway, so I may try things again. It's also got a inexpensive 240 gigabyte SSD, so I have plenty of room to play. I'm only using a 60 gig partition on the SSD, so I should be able to add other stuff pretty freely.
All right, I haven't done it in a while, so I think it's my turn to host. We ready to get this thing started?
I am.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio-only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio! Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Blindridge, he's a bloody drunk.
If you don't like the gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.